Hello, my name is Jeanette Mullaney. I am the assistant editor of searchappsecurity.com. And today we're going to be having a talk about injection attacks. Joining me is Caleb Sima. He is the co-founder, CTO, and director of Spy Labs, which is part of Spy Dynamics Incorporated. Hello, Caleb.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
Fine.
So I guess my first question is, about the variety of injection attacks, because it seems, you know, people seem to be aware of, you know, one or two, but they don't realize like what a tremendous variety there really is.
Yes, actually, injection attacks consist of most of the attacks, in fact, in terms of web applications anyways, of vulnerabilities. Most people are familiar with a vulnerability called SQL injection, where you are basically piggybacking a SQL command into a SQL statement that gets executed, and that is a very well-known exploit, SQL injection. But there are many others, including being able to inject into code-based languages such as PHP, Perl, JavaScript, all these different languages can also have their own type of injection attack based on whether you can include code that gets executed via some sort of call. Like, for instance, a lot of languages like Perl, JavaScript have an eval type statement where you can pass in code and actually just execute. So if there's input that goes to that type of statement, it's an injection attack. There's other types of attacks as well, such as XML injection, LDAP injection, where you're using LDAP queries instead of SQL. There's all sorts of different things. In fact, one of the attacks that a lot of people don't think about as being an injection attack is also cross-site scripting, where that is just an injection attack that is embedded into JavaScript or HTML pages. And those, you know, the top two vulnerabilities today are SQL injection and cross-site scripting, both of them in the injection category, I would add.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people aren't aware of that.
Yeah, you know, and it's just more of just about categorization, you know. And if you really think about it, if you think about all of these being injection attacks, and injection is really the ability to insert, you know, data into something else and piggyback it and make it, you know, execute. If you look at how many vulnerabilities, especially just focused in the security, that are based on this, you have SQL injection, cross-site scripting, LDAP injection, XML injection, file inclusion, which I also think is an injection attack, remote command execution, also an injection attack. All of these vulnerabilities all really are based in a category of injection. And anything that's based in a category of injection is all because of bad input. It's because the input coming in from either a user or a source is being trusted and is able to piggyback or get executed by the code or application. And if you really think about that, that's pretty amazing because, in a sense, all you'd really have to do is validate input properly, and then all of a sudden, a lot of those injection attacks become null and void.
So even though these attacks are, you know, there's a wide variety, it really comes down to input validation in terms of preventing most of them?
I mean, in my belief, yes, that's 100% correct. If you just take a look at an application, and if you just take a really badly coded web application that has a ton of vulnerabilities in it, and you told a developer who knows nothing about security, I want you to go through this code. Let's make, you know, an example, a simple web application. I want you to go through this code. I want you to go wherever there's input or untrusted input coming in from somewhere. I want you to validate it before you do anything else with it. So, for instance, if a phone number is coming in from a web form, I want you to validate with a regular expression to make sure that this is a phone number before you do anything with it. If it's not, then you return an error. Anywhere that input's coming out, validate it properly. And this developer will have no knowledge of security whatsoever, and you can hand him a completely vulnerable app to things like SQL injection and cross-site scripting. And if he goes and does that, immediately after he's completed, at least 80% of that app is going to be secure.
Oh, wow. So how do we encourage people to do this?
Well, that's a very good question. I wish I knew. that's all we've been trying to do is convince people that my message in this is that you know, people think that security is complicated. Developers think that security is complicated. The more that people think that security is complicated, the harder it is to implement something that works and the harder it is to get something done, because they think that it requires all this planning and, you know, strategy and policies that have to be put in place. And I agree with that in most cases. I'm a security guy, right? You can sit there and tell me, oh, you can do all this and you can lock everything up, but I'll find some way that, you know, someone, there's a risk somewhere that someone can break in. I mean, I'm just like any other security guy. I'm very pessimistic about it. But in the real world, in a company, in an organization that needs to fix security vulnerabilities in applications, you teach one simple thing. Just validate your input. If you can just teach this one simple thing to developers and to an organization and have them just implement that, you can effectively increase your security by 80% just like that. Yes, and you know, there's going to be security guys who are going to be listening to this, and they're going to say, oh yeah, but that doesn't fix the problem because you still have vulnerabilities in your code. And that is true. You still will have vulnerabilities in your code. But if input validation is done properly, those vulnerabilities are non-exploitable. And that is a very big key. So I'm not saying that you don't go and fix those vulnerabilities. You do, but if you just do input validation first and increase and harden your application 80%, boom, just like that, now you can go back and you have more time to actually go into the code and fix the actual vulnerabilities in the code and teach developers and train them on how to do it properly next time around. And but in the meantime, at least you're doing the number one thing that you should do to help make your app more secure, and that's input validation. And input validation is the key for protecting against things like injection attacks.
Mm-hmm. So why do you believe that injection attacks have become so prevalent?
Well, I mean, that's a hard question to answer. I guess, you know, when you really think about it, it's because of multiple things. First and foremost, developers are told to create and build functionality into a web application. And most of the time, design and features and functionality aren't created to talk about things like input validation, right? When I tell you, hey, I want to create this, I want you to develop this for me, I tell you something like, okay, I want you to develop a web application that takes all the prices from Expedia, Priceline, you know, Hotwire, and I want you to go and search on all those websites and bring me back a price that can compare all those prices together, right? That's what I tell you to do. That's mm-hmm. a feature of a web application. This will allow the customer to search one, you know, price for a hotel and then get, you know, eight different listings to compare which price is going to be better. That's what developers are told. And then they're told, okay, well, developers go and they build out a design. Well, we need to make sure that we get Expedia's prices and, you know, hotel.com's prices and then list them. But what is not talked about in there? I don't say, well, go and make sure that the input coming from Expedia is validated before you do anything. Make sure the input that's coming from Hotwire is validated. Make sure the input that the user is giving to you is validated against what it's supposed to be given to. That's not what they think about. You know, they think about functionality, end goal, projects. They have a certain time limit. So they go and they build this application and they do it quickly and they do it with the right amount of functionality that's required by their customers, and then they push it out. And that's the end of it. Security isn't a concern here, mostly because, you know, it's just not something that is going to bring revenue. Security is a feature that most users just take for granted, mm-hmm. right? No, most users don't demand security unless it's like an online bank or something like that. And even then, how effective do users think of online security? They think, well, is there a lock icon in my browser? If there is, I'm okay. Right?
Mm-hmm, right.
So there's no pressure from consumers to push on companies to do security. So because of that, it's not something that's important. And you know, when you take the developer's time frames, the developer's knowledge in terms of security, here's another big factor that most people don't think of. In order to do proper input validation, you have to know things like regular expressions. And regular expressions are just a pain in the rear to learn. They're complex. Nobody wants to learn that stuff,
mm-hmm.
right? And especially the common developer that you have in your organization probably doesn't know regular expressions very well. So just that alone, it's hard to implement input validation, even if it is required. And if it is implemented, it's implemented incorrectly. So, you know, all that stuff kind of all mashed together over years and years and years of building web applications, and you get bad input validation. Now, what's funny is I have a book. This is the first computer security book ever written, and I believe it was written in 1973, and it was written by a guy named James Martin. And you can actually find this book on eBay and buy it. It's like, I forget the title, I think it's Computers and Security or Accuracy and Systems or something like that by James Martin. And in the first chapter of the book, this is in 1973. I mean, nobody even thought about, the web, much less security, right?
Uh-huh.
But in the first chapter of this book, he has an entire section on input validation. And he says, if you're looking to accept input from a user, then, make sure it's a number, make sure it's a letter, make sure it's what you expect before you do anything with it. It's just proper coding.
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing that all the way from there to all the way today, that problem hasn't even gotten any better. It's just gotten worse.
Well, it seems like there almost would need to be a complete overhaul of the system in order for this to get any better. You have these developers who don't know regular expressions, that they're on a deadline, they're being asked to create features, not security measures. And if there's no pressure from consumers, although I do think that consumers are exerting a little bit more pressure. How do you fix that?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. One of the things that, I guess I don't want to, toot Spot Dynamics' horn or anything, but, one of the things that we try to do is we figured, okay, well, let's look at developers. Like you said, the developer's primary goal is to develop features and functionality. Everybody talks about wanting to educate the developer about security, and I agree with that. I agree that the developer needs to be educated, but is that going to solve the problem? I don't think so. The way that it solves the problem is this stuff needs to be built into either the interface or the language that the developer is developing in. When you make things idiot-proof, that's when things get better.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of when I'm sitting there and let's say I'll give you an example of how a developer might create a web form for accepting a username and password or something. What he might do is he has this on his computer screen, he has this little form that looks like a web page, and he takes what's called an input box, those little text fields that you enter text in, and he drags it onto his form and he plops it on the form, and then he arranges those the way that he likes. And then when he wants to do something with it, he goes in the code and then does something with it. Well, what if today, that's how it works, what if instead of that happening, what if they were able to grab that input text box, drop it onto the form, and immediately by default, it has a regular expression or a validator associated with that input. And that default validator is alphanumeric, and from one character to 15 characters max. That's default. Period. Without him doing anything, he just drags and drops it, there's already a default. Most developers are then going to develop that with that default, and that's going to be automatically validated. Well, let's say we even take it a step further, and then when they drag that input box onto the form again, maybe it automatically prompts them and says, what is this input box going to do, and gives them a nice list of validation routines that they can pick from. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is a phone number. Boom, it automatically becomes a phone number. And then they go on with their code. If you build it into the language, if you build it into the Visual Studio Designer, for instance, that's what we have a DevInspect product that kind of does it this way. If you build it into what they're using and make it idiot-proof to where, it just doesn't matter. You drag and drop it. It has secure defaults. Then these things can start getting eliminated. So, for instance, if I had a software project that was like that in my Visual project, we'll say Visual Studio for this example, and I took a kid right out of college who knew nothing about security but just knew how to develop code, and I plopped him down in front of it, and I said, okay, I want you to go ahead and build these web forms. He would build those and make them work, have no knowledge of security whatsoever, but everything would be properly validated.
Wow. Well, that sounds like one solution.
Right.
Do you know of, are there any other pushes like that?
Well, I mean, the big push in that is, for instance, then there's the people who say, well, there's another avenue of thought that says, well, what we need to do is we need to build a scanner to identify secure code problems or vulnerabilities. So, we need to scan through your source code, point out all the problems that's in your source code, and then help them develop remediations for those problems. And that's, source code scanners. that are available out there that will identify these problems. And that's one method and approach that's good, as long as, you know, it helps them fix it, which is the big key, is the fixing part. I don't necessarily want you to tell me everything that I did wrong. You could do that, but make sure if you tell me that, you give me an easy solution to help mm-hmm. fix those problems, because I don't have time to deal with it. And really, the proper solution is in the code. And right now, the two big areas of push is source code scanning to identify vulnerabilities and the ability to have a component or an object or something built into the tool that will automatically help developers build secure code as they build their application, which is something like, for instance, our company. We sell the DevInspect product that does that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And the other solution is more external, is more IT-based. And people say, well, what about web application firewalls? Can't I just put a web application firewall in front of my website and protect against all these attacks without having to change code at all? Which ideally is an absolutely fantastic idea. You know, if I don't have to talk to developers, if I don't have to mess with them, and I can just stick something in front of it and protect against web attacks, fantastic, I'm all for it. Unfortunately, these boxes don't necessarily do that. Here's the problem with these, is that they do a great job if they're stuck in front of a website that is fairly static, that doesn't contain any dynamic content on the client side, and is properly configured, and doesn't change that often. Mm-hmm. Those kind of boxes work really well. But let me ask you a question. How many websites do you know that are like that?
None.
Right. None. No one. None of them are like that. They're usually pretty large, very dynamic, lots of JavaScript, changes on a pretty consistent basis. Configuring rule sets for these types of apps is very difficult. I kind of consider a web app firewall sort of like a Band-Aid to the problem, and that is that you put a Band-Aid on top of the sore and hopes that, you know, it will help stop infection from getting in there and help it from getting any worse, but it doesn't fix the source of the problem,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, you have to go back and your body has to heal itself before it'll do anything. Then you can take the Band-Aid off.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of think of a web app firewall like that. I think web app firewalls are good for a second layer of defense,
right,
as protection, defense in depth. So stick one up there, configure it the best that you can, and use it to monitor and help your defense, but do not by any means rely on it.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, there you have it. It's all in the code. I suppose it's always about validating your code. And, you know, we have the two biggest threats to the web right now: cross-site scripting, SQL injection, in addition to a large number of other injection attacks that can be prevented simply by, you know, validating your code and validating your input. That seems to be the summation of your argument.
Yep, I agree. You know, I don't know how much time we have, but, you know, if you want to find out more information about, you know, types of these injection attacks or more web application vulnerabilities, you can always go to, you know, Search App Security website, where they have links. There are several websites out there like WASC, which is Web App Security. There's all sorts of areas that you can find lots of information on these types of attacks and more detail on it.
Thank you. Thanks for the Search App Security plug.
No problem.
And that's true. If you'd like to get more information on these attacks and also read advice that Caleb has given on the subject, you can go to www.searchappsecurity.com. Thank you so much, Caleb.
Okay.
You have a good day.
You too.